This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes.
The only limit to your achievements is the strength of your dreams and your willingness to work for them.
The only limit to the height of your achievements is the reach of your dreams and your willingness to work hard for them.
Deja vu at the Republican National Convention, freelance journalist Jarrett Hill on a historical expose.
I felt like she basically deleted South Side of Chicago and put it in Slovenia. Like, I mean, she really, really copied this.
Did Governor Rick Scott have to ditch the positive to fit the negative theme of the Republican Convention?
Today, America's in terrible world record high debt. Our economy is not growing. Our jobs are going overseas.
Scott's former spokesman, Brian Burgess, weighs in.
I do think it pains the governor a little bit to not talk about the successes that he's had in Florida, and I think there's been quite a few.
We shift our focus to the Democratic National Convention, where this week, Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum will use his coveted speaking slot to focus on unity.
To emphasize what it is that we share in common, and there is much more that unites us than divides us.
All that and more coming up on episode 69 of The Rotunda.
Lock her up. I love that.
That's Pam Bondi giving her speech, playing directly to the base of Trump supporters. And Governor Rick Scott veers a little off message.
A lot of politicians like to give speeches where they say, we are at a crossroads. That's not really where we are today. Today, America's in terrible world record high debt. Our economy is not growing. Our jobs are going overseas. We've allowed our military to decay, and we project weakness on the international stage.
We just wrapped up a very unconventional Republican National Convention. The theme, Make America Great Again. If you think about it, in order to make America great again, you have to make the case as to why America isn't so great right now. That's the best and most brief way to analyze Donald Trump's acceptance speech and campaign slogan. But before we get into the rest of the program, it's the Democrats' turn for some controversy ahead of what was expected to be a more peaceful and unifying convention.
I want to thank Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And I'm looking forward to working with her.
Traveling through Florida and just hours before Hillary Clinton thanked the Democratic Party chairwoman for her tireless work, a dark cloud was growing over Schultz's head after the release of leaked emails showing DNC staffers conspiring and favoring Clinton over Bernie Sanders. Sanders made the rounds on Sunday's talk show. Here he is on CNN's State of the Union with Jake Tapper.
Can we get someone to ask his belief? Does he believe in a God? He had skated on saying he has a Jewish heritage. I think I read he is an atheist. This could make several points difference with my peeps. My southern peeps would draw a big difference between a Jew and an atheist, unquote. Senator Sanders, that is the chief financial officer of the Democratic National Committee. What is your response?
Well, I think it's outrageous, but it is not a great shock to me. I think, as I said, it's what we talked about 6 months ago. I mean, there's no question to my mind, and I think no question to any objective observer's mind, that the DNC was supporting Hillary Clinton and was in opposition to our campaign. So I'm not quite shocked by this. And that is why, many, many months ago, I made it clear that I thought Debbie Wasserman Schultz should resign, should step down. Not only because of the prejudice I think they showed during the campaign, but also because I think we need a new leadership of the Democratic Party, which is going to open up that party to working people.
So after trying for months, Sanders will get his wish as Debbie Wasserman Schultz is out, planning to step down at the end of the convention. But Sanders supporters are furious, saying Schultz shouldn't participate at all in the convention. Stay tuned to RotundaPodcast.com for the latest in how this story plays out. Certainly a tit-for-tat moment. Republicans had chaos. Democrats are kicking off their convention with chaos. But certainly there is so much more to that story. Beyond the infighting at the DNC, what about Russia? What about WikiLeaks? How far can this hacking go? who's being targeted next, and how safe is our email communication. All right, so back to the regular program. Remember, Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum takes a break from his speech writing, literally, to give us a taste of what he's going to be sharing with the nation Wednesday night.
Can you give us a signal, like maybe raise your pinky and
I plan to say the
pull
name.
Pull in your ear and let us see that you're talking to us.
Listen, I plan to say the name with extreme emphasis, Tallahassee, Florida, the capital city of the third largest state in America.
But let's look back a bit. I had the pleasure of chatting with arguably the most sought-after job candidate in the media business. No, not Roger Ailes. This other guy lost his job months ago, but now things are really looking up.
Can you imagine me having to take a job at the Trump campaign because nothing else came in?
So you wouldn't take that offer. They say they hire the best.
Tramell, if you don't get out of here.
That's Jarrett Hill, a laid-off journalist that turned the Trump campaign upside down. He changed the national conversation with his tweets after making this link.
Barack and I were raised with so many of the same values, like
that you work hard for what you want in life,
that your word is your bond, that you do what you say,
that you treat people with respect.
We want our children in this nation to know that the only limit to your achievement is the strength of your dreams and your willingness to work for them.
That's Melania Trump's primetime speech playing over Michelle Obama's 2008 speech. Similar, right? Well, I connected with Hill, who was still processing his newfound international fame after shaking up the RNC convention via Twitter. Get this, he was doing this all while lounging at a Starbucks in California watching the speech.
I think the first time it occurred to me that this might be a big deal was after the first night was over and I had already done live on television in Britain with the BBC, and then I'd done a BBC radio thing, and I did New York Times, and I did something else as well, and I'd done like four interviews that night before going to bed at 2:30. And I was lying in bed and I was staring at the ceiling, and I thought to myself, the Trump campaign has issued a statement regarding my tweet. Whoa, that's kind of crazy. And like, that was the first time it occurred to me. And then all day yesterday, and then today, like seeing that the ways that the Trump campaign has responded, it's been a little bit nuts.
Yeah, you know, the funniest thing, I was expecting a job offer from the Trump campaign since they're so unconventional.
Oh, please, can you imagine me having to take a job at the Trump campaign because nothing else came in?
So you wouldn't take that offer. They say they hire the best.
Tramell, if you don't get out of here. No, I mean, the idea that the Trump campaign would call me with something nice to say, first of all, it feels outrageous. But secondly, I mean, I can't imagine working on that campaign. I don't think Hillary Clinton is a perfect candidate, but I'm definitely happy with a lot of the things that she's going for, and I'm with her. But I cannot imagine working with Donald Trump. That'd be amazing. That'd be amazingly bad.
Why did Michelle Obama's speech stand out to you so much that you even remembered it? Because I tell you, like all the pundits, I've been watching live on TV and everyone's giving analysis. And immediately after, everyone praised the speech, but no one really looked at it so critically like you have. So why did it resonate with you 2008 that you remembered it so well today?
And it wasn't that I remembered Michelle Obama's whole entire speech, because I don't really remember what I ate for breakfast yesterday. But it was more about the quote that I remembered. I remembered that short little piece of what Michelle Obama had said, and that is what stuck with me. Because I remembered when she was speaking that she said that the only limit to the height of your achievements is the reach of your dreams and your willingness to work for them. So when I heard Melania say the only limit to the height of your achievements, or I think she changed one word in there, is the reach of your dreams, I said out loud back to the screen, and your willingness to work for them. And then I realized, whoa, hold up, that's pretty weird. I know that line, which kind of launched into where we are now.
Yeah, and then you issued a correction that it wasn't just one line.
Right. Well, see, when I thought it was that one line, I thought, oh, this is some plagiarism. How could she? And then I realized how much of it was, and it was like, well, if it were only that one line, she probably could have got away with it. But I mean, she deleted Barack and said us or whatever, and like she, I felt like she basically deleted South Side of Chicago and put in Slovenia. Like, I mean, she really, really copied this. So, and now we obviously know that the speechwriter was the one who has kind of owned up to it, offered a resignation, and allegedly that resignation was not accepted, which is even more interesting about the way that they run the campaign over at the Trump Party. So,
another reason why you wouldn't work for them.
I mean, you said that.
So, for like a teachable moment for people in this business, your business as you're exploring journalism jobs where plagiarism is a no-no. What do you say to those? You know, the disappointing thing was watching people deny and play down what happened as if it's, oh, it's just a slight similarity. What do you make of the defense that came as a result of this?
Tramal, I think defense might be a very strong word to use there, or might be a generous word to use there. I've been saying on the shows, like, this is one of those moments where I think about that phrase, don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. Like, the Trump campaign has been peeing on our leg for 13 months, right? So like, and telling us to kind of look away. Ooh, do you see that squirrel? I don't even know if how teachable this moment can be because they've been doing this so much. I mean, this was like a pretty big screw up. And it was kind of an undeniable fact check, which is not new for this campaign, right? Like, how many times have we had a discussion about, you know, you cannot afford to build that wall. No, Mexico is not going to pay for it. Or, you know, net immigration has been zero for years from Mexico. Like, all of those different things, when we fact check them, it's, you know, it doesn't really resonate. And I guess this was the one that has, so.
Lastly, what do you make of the business now where we are sort of forced to take Donald Trump seriously? How do you deal with that when you walk back into a newsroom and you have to cover this and you're seeing all of the absurd things that he has said, and it's pushing as fact, and you're stuck in this, like, you can't call it out because you're going to be looked at as being unfair or something like that. What do you make of journalism today in dealing with the Trump campaign?
Well, I would actually push back on that. I don't think we have a responsibility to accept it as fact. I think we have a responsibility to report it. So I think what's important is that we can discuss what he's done, but the journalist part is we need to discuss what's true and what's not. And not even from a biased perspective or I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican, I'm a libertarian or green or whatever, or independent. But it's about, you said this and this is what's true. Sometimes those two things are the same. You said Donald Trump, we know that to be true. You said that, you know, you are worth X amount of money. Well, you know, Forbes says X. Like, we have to investigate what is true about what's being said. We have to do that. So from a journalism perspective, it does get tiring to talk about Donald Trump every day. Mm-hmm.
And he's constantly saying these things that aren't true over and over again, that ultimately, like, there is no more fact-checking anymore because there is no accepting of responsibility. It's this, it's on to the next big issue.
Well, I think there's a lot of fact-checking. I just don't think it's resonating with his supporters. So, like, while he is busy out there saying, you know, next random said thing, whether or not it's true, his supporters have really bought into Donald. They haven't bought into his vision or his platform or his positions or his, you know, world, his domestic policy or his foreign policy or any of those things. They've bought into Donald. So, I mean, and we learned that back when Donald said, you know, I could go out on Fifth Avenue and shoot someone in the face and my supporters would stick with me. And then they did. You know what I mean? Like, they heard him say that and didn't leave and have only grown. So I think the journalism part is the same. I think the way that we have to talk about it is being received a little bit differently, but we still have to call out, you know, what's not true and what point out what is true.
Well, Jarrett Hill, thank you so much for taking this time out of your busy schedule. I'm looking forward to seeing where you land next. Hopefully I'll see you on TV alongside one of these pundits and bringing truth to all these claims and informing us as we'd like to see.
Absolutely. And as a fellow podcaster, keep up the work. I know podcasting is not easy. I know it's a lot of work, and I must plug my podcast. We'll be back with a new episode on Friday at getbacktoreality.com with the number 2. My podcast is Back to Reality, and we'll be doing that. It'll be fun.
All right. I look forward to a double plug. Plug the Rotunda. Yes, let's do some cross promotion.
Awesome, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Take care.
This is The Rotunda, a podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. Visit rotundapodcast.com to learn more about the program and ways to lend your support, either through corporate sponsorships, donations, you name it. Check out rotundapodcast.com. Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi took full advantage of her primetime slot. Surprisingly, Donald Trump restrained himself from jumping on the lock her up chant that was heard throughout the convention.
Lock her up, I love that.
Governor Rick Scott's remarks were noticeably different since he was no longer touting progress through jobs, jobs, jobs. Here's Brian Burgess, Scott's former communications director, who's now publisher of The Capitalist.
So the big attention has been the RNC. Your boss, former boss, Governor Rick Scott, gave his speech. What did you make of his speech?
This year, we get to fire the politicians. And who better to let the politicians know you're fired than Donald Trump?
Well, I think a lot of folks were actually struck by the fact that it was sort of negative on the economy in general, which was something that he's not used to talking about. He's more used to talking about Florida and Florida's successes. And I think he may have sort of done a favor for the folks that asked him to come speak and stuck to the topics they wanted him to stick to. I do think it pains the governor a little bit to not talk about the successes that he's had in Florida, and I think there's been quite a few. I think he loves talking about the jobs and job creation, and that wasn't one of the hallmarks of the speech in Ohio this week. So I do think it was a little bit different from what he's used to doing.
What did you make of the overall convention?
Well, I didn't go there, but obviously I followed, like everybody else, I followed the news, and it's all about, the Trump campaign's in disarray and all this stuff. I don't necessarily buy that. I think I think people know where I stood, at least those that know me, know that I wasn't a Trump fan and haven't been really a Trump fan for a long time. I'm concerned that some of the things he says, in my view, are good. I mean, don't get me wrong. I know that sometimes he's a little inflammatory about what he says, but in terms of his campaign promises and things he's talking about delivering, all sound good to conservatives. So I'm one of those guys that thinks if he can deliver those things, good. But if he's just paying lip service to those conservative principles, then I'm going to have a real problem with that. His speech last night, people say it was, sort of a downer. It was the complete opposite of Reagan's Shining City on the Hill. But I do think the reason Trump is running away with the nomination this year is because most people, especially conservatives, don't view America as the Shining City on the Hill anymore. They are concerned that we've fallen away from that, and that they view Trump as the guy who's going to kick the Capitol dome over in Washington, D.C. and sort of fix America or correct it. And people may disagree about whether he'll be successful or not, but that's the promise that he holds.
I'll push back a little and say this Republican convention was a lot of disarray because the guy that you did support, Ted Cruz, what was that? He was invited, he showed up, and...
it wasn't your typical convention, I'll give you that, but I don't know that it was... I don't know that it did it any disservice to the candidate himself. Ultimately, let's talk about Cruz first.
We will unite the party, we will unite the country by standing together for shared values, by standing for liberty. God bless each and every one of you, and God bless the United States of America.
Ultimately, I think Cruz and how that speech is remembered, it depends largely not on Cruz anymore, but on how history remembers Donald Trump. If he's defeated in November, then Cruz, he may get the blame for it, but he may be able to propel himself from the ashes of that defeat. If Trump goes on to become president of the United States, then what he does as president will again have a huge impact on how Cruz's speech is remembered. So it was a huge risk that Cruz took. But what I view Cruz as is a guy who believes what he believes and he sticks to it. And that's what I admire about him.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into criticizing or attacking Donald Trump, but I'll just give you this response. I am not in the habit of supporting people who attack my wife and attack my father.
Where's this really haircut? Sure. Where's this haircut? You apparently drew Trump in your head because of a failed bet, not expecting him to be this far along in the race.
No, I think it's fair. I bet that he would not be the nominee. I bet this is in September of last year. Folks were sitting around the table at lunch here at Andrews, and they were saying it's over. The race is finished, and Trump is the nominee. There's no way anybody else is going to be able to overcome this. And I just couldn't get my head around it because Trump, you know, this is the same thing we've been talking about. He seems a little bit reckless, but, you know, now we know the reason his appeal is there is because people do view this country as maybe very, very close to the brink. And they want somebody who's going to jerk the wheel away from the edge of the cliff and steer back away from it. Again, a lot of people think that the opposite, that he's going to, you know, veer into the cliff. I get it. But that's his appeal. It's a very strong sentiment. People are very energetic about it. And I just didn't see it back in September. I was more of a conventional wisdom guy. But now I'm starting to have my eyes opened. And yeah, I had to shave his name into my scalp. Fortunately, it's gone now. But
that's Brian Burgess, former spokesman for Governor Rick Scott. And we'll hear more about his new venture, The Capitalist, later in the program. But first, let's turn the spotlight to the Democratic National Convention, where Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum will be addressing the nation along with some other notables who are a little more accustomed to the national stage.
I'm on a complicated day. I'm on Wednesday, which is the night that President Obama is scheduled to speak. It's also the day
that
Vice President Biden is supposed to speak, and also the vice presidential nominee, Senator Kaine, is supposed to speak. And so it's a very, very tight agenda. The president has to be on in prime time, and there are a lot of things that have to go right.
Well, Mayor Gillum was kind enough to sit down for this interview in between his busy schedule this week. One day he's in Tampa, the next he's off to Philadelphia. But here he is, with me, taking a break from his speech prep to give us a little insight into what he'll be sharing with the nation.
I don't want to overhype it. I think it'll be, I'm honored to obviously be doing it. It will be a brief period of time in the context of a 5-day conference. But I'm pleased that I hope they'll add more Floridians. But right now, I think I'm the only Floridian in the release schedule so far who will be speaking. And, you know, I provided my comments to the Clinton speechwriting team. They have provided their comments back to me, and it'll be a little negotiation, and hopefully we'll end up with a very brief and yet solid and impactful message.
So people draw inspiration for moments like this from others in the past. Where are you getting inspiration for your speech, if at all, or if you're just pulling this out and sitting down, isolating yourself and putting thoughts on paper?
Well, I tell you, this is an important moment in our nation's history. I guess I can say that one of the things that I'm being charged to hit on a little bit is the tension that exists between community and law enforcement and the need for unity between what may look like different constituencies, but to emphasize what it is that we share in common. And there is much more that unites us than divides us. And also at the same time trying to stay centered in this moment, remembering where it is that I came from. I'll be able to hit on that just a little bit, my own personal biography. And then encourage people around why it is that in these particular times we need someone like Hillary Clinton to help bring our country together. That the divisive rhetoric that we heard for a week on end at the Republican convention is not a solution for this country. Mature nations know how to deal with tough times, and they don't do it through derision and division.
but finding the common threads between us and bringing people together. And frankly, that's the story of this country, and I think that's what most nations admire most about the United States.
So what are your thoughts on Black Lives Matter, and then to see the rise of Blue Lives Matter?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm probably one of the folks that is not offended by the term Black Lives Matter. I'm also not offended by the term Blue Lives Matter. They both speak to communities that have been targeted. In the case of Black Lives Matter, you have folks crying out saying that we're relevant, that we ought to be treated as human, not as threats, but being woven into the fabric of acceptance and of what it means to be an everyday American. And for too many African Americans, that isn't the lived experience. And we won't be whole until that becomes a common and lived experience for all Black people and people of color. And as it relates to Blue Lives Matter, as we saw down in Baton Rouge and in Dallas, Texas, when people target you and attempt to take you out simply because you wear the badge, a badge that should be honorable, a badge that rushes toward danger when everyone else runs away from it, then you're also targeted. And it's important that we lift up what it means to be in law enforcement, the difficult work that they do, the fact that just like you and I, they want to also go back to their families alive and well at the end of the day. And again, part of what I'll talk about is what it is that we have in common. And if we begin to see each other more as human, as folks with shared experiences, we'll be much better off than I think the ciphering that takes place.
So what can you do for Tallahassee while you're on this stage? I'm thinking here. Can you give us a signal, like maybe raise your pinky and shake it?
I plan to say the
pull
name.
Pull in your ear and let us see that you're talking to us.
Listen, I plan to say the name with extreme emphasis, Tallahassee, Florida, the capital city of the third largest state in America and maybe the most important electoral state around. We know that if Hillary Clinton wins the state of Florida, she takes the White House. So I'm not concerned about Nevada and Colorado and Pennsylvania and Ohio. I'm concerned about Florida and what Florida will do. And so I think they know that. I think the Clinton campaign knows that. And I think the convention staff know that. And I think they're going to try to showcase the best of what we have to offer. I'm just honestly overwhelmed and humbled to be part of the message that they want to send to the country about what Florida has to offer.
All right. Well, Mayor Gillum, all the best to you. I'll be looking and watching, and I hope it goes off smoothly.
I'll tug my ear just for you.
I'll be looking for that.
As we wrap up, there is a new app on the block. It is almost like a one-stop shop gathering for all news in Florida politics, aside from the Rotunda, or in addition, or alongside. Well, of course it is. You can also stream this program, The Rotunda, directly from the app. So it is all-inclusive. It's called The Capitalist, and its developer is Brian Burgess.
Well, Ryan Duffy actually said when on launch day, he called it the Swiss Army knife of Florida politics, and I wish I had thought of it myself, but he said I could use it, and it really is an apt description of what the app does. It's packed with a bunch of features that I think folks in this town will find useful, and I think kind of how I've been marketing it is this is an app and a website for people whose business is politics, and I'm trying to make it useful. It's got lobbyist lookups. It's going to have a number of other features we're going to add similar to that for convenience, looking up legislators, looking up meet members of the media, and of course, content from all around the state, not just our content, but floridapolitics.com, where Peter Schorsch and all of his stable of writers, and then every other source that you're used to seeing as well. And then, of course, our original content, too. So I've got a couple of writers working for me, plus myself, and we're trying to keep up. But that's the goal, is sort of make it an all-in-one, one-stop shop for folks in this town and across the state who are interested in politics and what's going on in Tallahassee.
To learn more about Brian's app, just download it from your app store or visit thecapitalist.com. That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Special thanks to Jarrett Hill, Brian Burgess, and Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum. Remember to visit rotundapodcast.com and join us again next week right here for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.